What resonates the most with listeners after hundreds of Dr. Shoup Show episodes? Well, new patients who first meet the doc at Microscope Dentistry by Shoup typically ask things like, is what you say on your radio show actually true? Is there such a thing as not doing crowns? You try to avoid drilling down teeth as much as possible?
Well, how is that even possible?
What other dentists see as impossible, Dr. Randy Shoup makes it a reality by practicing biomimetic dental methods and procedures every single day. Hear more now on The Dr. Shoup Show. Digest all of our on-demand education at ddsradio.com. Now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Hello, everybody. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much for deciding to spend another hour with me. This is where you go to learn things you certainly will never learn anywhere else. We're going to talk about really important topics that are designed to help you make great decisions for your health, your well-being, for you, your family, your loved ones, your neighbors. We want everybody to live a long, happy, healthy, disease-free life with the fewest numbers of medical interventions possible. That's what it's all about. And if you are a veteran of the program, you will understand how this works. We go to dental school first, and we're going to discuss today, you know, everything is truly created twice. It's created first in your imagination, in your mind, as you conceptualize things, and then, and only then, after you've done that work, does it turn into reality. Dentistry should be handled exactly the same way. And I'm going to give you a wonderful case in point from a patient that came in where that whole process had not been followed, and it led to a disaster. You'll like this. He didn't, but you will. And then ask the expert, who on this planet lives the longest lifetimes with the least amount of health problems? I know the answer. Let's see if you can come up with the answer. And I'm going to explain to you why they live the longest with the least amount of health problems. It is a cool thing. And you get to meet my buddy Bill. Now, fairly new patient to the practice, had really been disappointed by dentistry and stayed away from dentistry for a long, long time until it really started to nag on him that he may have some serious problems that are scary, and he didn't want it to be scary. So he went to one dentist who scared him. Then he shows up at my office, and it was an entirely different world for him. He's going to tell you this story. It is a great story that you do not want to miss. But first, you know, science has had a great mystery. We know that humankind came out of Central, East Central Africa and migrated and populated the entire world. We find evidence of all of that in Africa. We find evidence of all the human, early human beings throughout Europe as they go into the Americas. But you know, all of those people had to pass through what we now know as the area of Saudi Arabia. You know what? We never found any evidence of all of those people traipsing through this gigantic region of the world. How did they get through there to other places, never leaving a trace? Well, we found the traces. I'm going to tell you all about it right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
It really makes you think. Think.
Yes, we know it is true. Humankind developed in the area of East Central Africa, in what is Somalia, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, all that central area, the Rift Valley. And as humans developed, they then expanded and spread out and literally populated the world. In order to make that trek out of Africa up into the rest of the world, you have to pass through what we now know as the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. It is the land bridge that would have existed to let all of these people migrate up through. We have looked at length through the area that is Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, all those places, and we found very, very few traces of any sort of humankind that we normally see in archaeological digs until now. Stone tools and ancient animal fossils have revealed that early humans were in Arabia 400,000 years ago. Prehistoric climate change may have encouraged their travels across now is what a vast stretch of desert, according to this new research. Saudi Arabia's deserts are some of the driest regions in the world, but it was a different story hundreds of thousands of years ago. Environmental changes occurred after periods of heavy rainfall in the desert, creating lush grasslands that served as the perfect backdrop for early human ancestors migrating to and from Africa. So what we missed in our thought process was to look deep enough in the ground to discover that at one point, what we all now know as the huge desert oil fields of Saudi Arabia was a lush tropical forest. There were massive lakes and pools of water everywhere, such that it was able to sustain hippopotamus, lions, giraffe, all of the animals that you think about in Africa, and only over eons of time did all of the climate change to where it went from a lush tropical place to a certainly foreboding desert. But when you dig deep enough, you find the remnants of these lakes, you find hippopotamus bones, you find early human tools. And so what we thought was a barren wasteland that had no human population in it at all, we now know we were simply looking in the wrong place. The oldest tools belong to cultures that relied on hand axes, meaning they were cutting down trees. Like early human ancestors, Homo erectus and Homo habilis, the transition to a more developed stone technology could have belonged to even later ancestors of us human beings. Arabia has long been an empty place about the past, but our work shows that there were active human existences in Saudi Arabia 400,000 years ago, and that's cool. Massive wild cattle, ostriches, gazelles, and even hippos lived along the shores of the numerous lakes that surrounded all of the grasslands and savannas that we now know as the Arabian Desert. So there you have it. We simply didn't look in the right place. Doesn't mean it wasn't there. It means we weren't looking and seeing it. Reminds me of a guy that looks through a microscope all day long working on teeth. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. You get a microscope, you can see it. So cool I make these connections. Now, up next. Everything is created twice. First in your imagination and then in reality. I'm going to tell you the relevance of that, the big relevance of that in dentistry right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at dtsradio.com.
So setting a reminder in your smart device or doing a post-it note to make sure you do not miss this weekly radio segment is a really smart decision. The doctor strives to make you a smarter dental consumer every week as we enter Dental School 101 right here on the Dr. Shoup Show. Your continuing education platform is ddsradio.com. Now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, it is so good to have you here. Thank you very, very much. I always appreciate it when you decide to spend an hour with me. I love it. I'm happy to do the work, present the information. It is great. Today's topic comes to me and then therefore goes to you because of an interaction I had just this past week with one of my patients. He came in and had just completed a major mouth reconstruction. And it cost him a small fortune to have all of his teeth, quote, fixed. And when the job was done, he was miserable. Nothing fit. Nothing felt good. He couldn't chew. He couldn't bite. He couldn't nip off a sandwich. He was getting food caught between his teeth. It was an unmitigated disaster. So as he and I chatted about the process, it's clear after I did my exam that he had had extensive amounts of dentistry done. And I said to him, help me understand how this process went. And he said, well, the dentist said I needed all this dental work done. And I told the dentist that I really wanted to do it in terms of kind of how my cash flow worked and so forth. And so the dentist said, well, great. You tell me kind of basically how much you have to spend. And he says, we'll pick the worst tooth, we'll do that one, and then we'll pick the other next worst tooth, we'll do that one, and we'll just go down the line. So they would fix one on the upper left, and then they would fix one on the lower right, and then they would fix two on the upper right, and then they would fix one on the lower left, and they just danced around like this. And I said, well, tell me about what your overall goal was. And he looked at me and he said, what do you mean my overall goal? I said, well, you had to have a plan. You had to have mapped out what you were doing. What was the, you know, Stephen Covey said, begin with the end in mind. You had to have an end game. He said, no, we were just going through and fixing the teeth. And I said, you didn't have a process. You didn't have a schedule. You didn't have a methodology to get you to where you wanted to go. You were just kind of, I said, for example, it would be like you getting in your car and spinning a dial and it says north. And you go north for a while, and then you spin a dial, and then it says west, and you drive west for a while. How on earth will you ever get to where you want to go, and you'll never know where you wind up? And he goes, well, yeah, kind of is like that. So here is this cautionary tale, and this is why I said everything that is successful is built actually twice. It is built first in somebody's imagination. Take the example if you want to build a new house. Now, I'm talking about you want to build a new house. It's not an existing house that's already sitting there that you walk into and you go, well, this looks nice, I'll buy it. I'm talking about you starting with an empty lot and deciding you're going to build the house that you want on this piece of property. So you think about it, you dream about it, you fantasize about it. You say, well, I want this and I don't want that. And boy, I really want this and I could stand to have that. And then you get with somebody that knows how to be a draftsman or an architect or a designer, and you tell them what you want and you translate your vision to them. They then translate that vision into a drawing on a paper that you then look at and tweak and adjust. And then once you ultimately decide that that's what you want to do, then you give it to a truly an architect or an engineer that creates all the working drawings, and then the working drawings then go to the contractor, who then figures out how do I build this, and only after that does anybody actually show up at your piece of property and start digging or hammering or sawing. None of that happened for this guy and his dentistry. That massive amount of planning never happened. So it was like he had a truck deliver a bunch of cinder blocks, a bunch of wood, a bunch of nails, some doors, some windows, and he said, build me a house. And they said, well, we can't work all the time. Well, build what you can and then come back and build some more. You would never think about doing that in terms of building a house. People do that in terms of building their teeth, building their occlusion all the time. That's why I absolutely positively insist I will not, you cannot talk me into beginning your dental treatment without doing a comprehensive exam to see what's going on, B, then doing the analysis of that comprehensive exam, taking all that data and thinking it through. And then after that, I'll create what's called a priority sequence. And that is, if you want to put yourself back together, you need to do it in this order. And it maps out step one, step two, step three. It's like trying to build a piece of furniture from IKEA. And you decide that you know how to do it. You don't need the instructions. And you know what all the little parts are. You don't need the little legend over there that tells you what they are. And you just start putting things together. I will promise you, it will not go together. I will promise you that you're going to have parts left over. You're going to run out of parts. It's going to fall over. It's going to be crooked. You're going to get boards backwards or upside down. You have to follow the plan that somebody that's really smart put together that tells you this is how this thing goes together. Then at the end of the day, you have something that actually functions and works, and it's what you want. Dentistry is exactly the same way. If you simply jump in it haphazardly without a game plan, without an end point, without understanding, articulating, thinking about how do I want my teeth to be at the end? What do I want my teeth to feel like? What sort of chewing ability is important for me? What sort of aesthetics are important for me? You have to think those things through, and then you and I discuss those topics at length. And then once we discuss those topics, I'll come to an understanding of this is where you want to go. This is your end point. This is what you want it to be like. Then I'll create a literal step-by-step game plan that gets you from where you are now to where you want to be. It's incredibly simple when you really think about it. It is incredibly tedious. It's time consuming. It is a lot of extra work that, quite honestly, I don't actually ever get paid for. Most dentists don't do this because, A, they don't get paid for all of the time and the hours that they spend studying things. They don't get paid for the time they spend looking at your models or reviewing things, so they tend not to do those things because there's no benefit, there's no compensation for them. There's nothing they can bill insurance for. But if you want your dentistry to be a signature piece that you've done, if you want your creation of dentistry to be an artwork that you're happy to put your name on and sign, you've got to do that preliminary work in order to make the end result what you want it to be. So, for my guy that came in with this haphazard, do one here, do one there, do one somewhere else, do one over here, we literally had to begin again. and we had to start over. And unfortunately, he had to make the investment in redoing the dentistry that he had about a year and a half to 2 years previously paid for to do. But I told him, I said, you are going to be miserable. You are going to have uncomfortable teeth. You are going to be unhealthy. You are going to be picking food out between your teeth for as long as you live if you live with these teeth. And he says, I hate the way I am. And he says, I hate the thought of having to pony up again. But he said, I much prefer to be healthy and have my teeth function rather than put up with what I have now. So I would rather go with the new and get rid of the plague that I'm suffering from the old. So, indeed, we have begun a new process. We have begun a step-by-step sequence of events that will ultimately restore every section of his mouth, top, bottom, right, left, and then finally the front. And it will be healthy, it'll be balanced, it'll work harmoniously with his jaws, he won't get food caught between his teeth, he will have teeth that feel really great to his tongue, he'll have teeth that he can chew and eat and smile and laugh and speak, and he will be happy for years and years and years rather than miserable. So you always want to create everything twice. Create it first in the imagination and in the planning, then go to create the reality. That's how it works. Now, who on this planet lives the longest and the healthiest lifetime? I know the answer. Have you been thinking about it? I'm going to tell you right after this.
You're listening to The Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. Do you think reading countless industry articles every week, digging into medical journals, and following worldwide science trends is fun? Then you should be hanging out with the host of this show. It's time for Ask the Expert on The Dr. Shoup Show. Hear and see more after the show at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, it is so good to have you here. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it. And I asked the question, who on this planet lives the longest and has, in the overall scheme of things, the healthiest lives as they are living to these extended years on the calendar? And it is clearly, hands down, the Japanese. The Japanese are the longest living and, in the overall scheme of things, healthiest human beings as a overall population that we have. Now, you will find individuals here and there scattered around here in the U.S. that live long, healthy, happy lives. But as a population, as a group, as a mass of human beings, these folks, on average, far excel anybody else. So the question then becomes, what is there about either A, the genetics, or B, the lifestyle of the people who are living in Japan or Japanese in origin that helps them to be such long livers? This point was driven home to me when I was in Japan just this past March. I was commuting on the local trains. I was out in the community. I was in, not in Tokyo entirely, but north towards Fukushima. And I simply was sitting there on my hour train rides, looking at people, watching people as it would go through the town. And in general, the people that you see are fit. They are not obese or overweight. They have a very appropriate body mass for their height, and they have a healthy look about them. They were smiling. They were happy. They were interacting with other people. And it just gave me a really, really great warm sense being there, immersed in that. Contrast that to the last holiday, extended holiday weekend. I was on my motorcycle and was simply tooling around the countryside and going wherever the road looked nice. I had no particular agenda, and I found a couple of lakes where I stopped and sat by the lake and enjoyed the water and the sunshine. And as I was looking around, everybody, with a few rare exceptions, was morbidly obese, swollen, puffy, unhealthy looking, had bad skin tone and color, not representative of a healthy, vibrant person. They were huffing and puffing. They never smiled. And it gave me this real sense of depression about the population of the United States as I'm sitting there doing the exact same thing in the good old US of A that I did in Japan. Japan gave me a really warm, fuzzy feeling, and I felt embarrassed and sorry for the US population. So in doing my research, I looked at, are there genetic determinants that are creating this? And for us right now, with our even this sophistication that we have in terms of genomics, there does not appear to be a healthy gene that turns on for the Japanese population and an unhealthy gene that turns on for the U.S. population. What it appears to boil down to is what we shove in our face, and that is our diet. What do we eat? And if you are in Japan, there are several foods that you virtually never eat. And whether that has become ingrained in a cultural thing, or whether it is how they have developed their palate to what is palatable, what tastes good to them. I mean, there are some tribes that will find a grub worm under a tree and consider it a piece of cheesecake. It's wonderful. Oh my gosh, this is just the greatest treat. I'm going to take this home and share it with my kids. It's great. And they pop a grub worm in their mouth and eat it and don't think a thing about it. They like it. That wouldn't go over too well here. So is it the taste that has been developed? Or is it simply what they know to be healthy and unhealthy, and they have the ability to discern those things? So I wanted to look at what do people in Japan eat and what do they avoid. So I've got several of these, and my research indicates that these are fairly ubiquitous throughout all of the studies that are done on Japanese diets. So the first one is the Japanese will not eat what are called processed meats. These are factory processed meats. You know them as bologna. We know it as summer sausage. We know it as all those different round or square pressed into a sleeve meat that we see at the deli counter. That meat product is filled with all kinds of the worst cuts of meat. It is filled with massive amounts of cholesterol, massive amounts of salt, and massive amounts of trans fats, all of which are the most unhealthy things you can possibly consume. There are high correlations between the ingredients in processed meat and colorectal cancer and breast cancer. And so we fill these meats with things that actually set the stage for us to be unhealthy. So where do the Japanese get their protein? They get it from salmon and tuna. They get it from fish mostly. They get a lot of their protein from chicken. And they eat a lot of their fish products in terms of sushi raw. When I was lecturing, they give you these little boxes that have variety of sushis in them, and it's raw fish on these little rice cakes, and it was delicious. It was amazing. And this is what they eat. Very filling, very good for you. The second thing the Japanese don't eat is fast food. Now, I will give you one caveat. McDonald's and Burger King and all of the fast food franchises have invaded Japan. And the young kids, the millennials, flock to those places because they are Western and they are not of a original Japanese origin. But here's the rub. Japan is experiencing a huge explosion in adolescent obesity, adolescent high blood pressure, adolescent cholesterol levels because they love consuming American fast food. And so the older population of Japan virtually shuns the food, and certain populations maybe eat it once a year, but that's it. So where do you get that satisfaction? The Japanese have figured out to use tofu or soy to make soy veggie burgers, which are significantly healthier, or they don't eat any of the meat products at all. They do grilled chicken. Now, it is true. Japan is famous for its ultra, ultra, ultra high grade Kobe beef. And they do enjoy their beef, but they enjoy beef from a cow that has been particularly raised to be insanely lean and incredibly flavorful. They don't eat McDonald's hamburger meat. Just doesn't happen. The second thing that they don't drink very much of is soda. Now, you will find vending machines everywhere in Japan. And vending machines will sell you anything and everything. But they tend to enjoy and drink a lot more water, flavored water, or they drink fruit juice. They don't drink pop. You very rarely see them consuming carbonated beverages unless they're of the younger generation and those folks are having really significant health problems. The other thing they don't hardly ever eat, sugary breakfast cereal. Breakfast in Japan is delicious. They have eggs. They have a variety of tofu or soy products. They have delicious, absolutely delicious fish dishes and cheese that works in yogurts and granola. Brilliant, delicious breakfasts, none of which, though, has any sugary breakfast cereals to it. And it's rare. You look around at like a morning buffet. There's no cereal. There's no Fruit Loops. There's no Count Chocula. There's none of those sorts of things that we shove down our kids' faces at our kids' demand because they're all on this gigantic sugar high. And the last thing that they don't eat very much of at all is candy. They do love their desserts. Absolutely, positively. And they are huge treats that they do occasionally. They love really fancy pastries, but in terms of candies, candy bars, little bags of jujubes or anything like that, the Japanese stay away from high sugar candy. So if you follow that methodology, I promise you, you are going to be a lot healthier than where you are. Now, up next, you get to meet my buddy Bill. Now, this is the coolest thing. He is an educator, but when he came to me, he got educated. He'll tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to The Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. There's a common theme we've heard over the years during our patient testimonies feature. Dr. Shoup, you say things my dentist never said to me. You follow it up with procedures that prevent future problems I otherwise would have had to face. And your microscope dentistry by Shoup team is freaking awesome. You're listening to The Dr. Shoup Show. We're online at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
We are beautiful.
Well, it is so great to have all of you here. Thank you very much. And if you have listened to the show at all, you know this is my favorite section because I get to introduce to you one of my friends from the office. And I'm super excited today because this gentleman has a kindred spirit past in that he has been a lifelong educator. My whole family have been educators. I was a teacher for a short period of time until I realized the job was way too hard and I needed something easier, so I went to dental school. And so I have the maximum admiration for my friend Bill. How are you?
I'm doing good, Randy. Good to hear your voice.
Well, it's great to hear you, my friend. Yes, you have been a lifelong educator. You now educate children. You teach them English when English is not their first language.
That's true. Some of my students speak three or four languages.
I think that is, you and I talked about it. I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel around the globe a bit, and it always is an embarrassment to me that we Americans are so limited in our language, the breadth of what we do. You go to Europe, you go anywhere, people commonly speak two, three languages as a routine. We speak one.
Absolutely.
It's kind of embarrassing.
We call it a monolingual society.
Yeah, we got one, and that's all we're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Well, I told everybody a little bit earlier, you had a history with dentistry. You stayed away from dentistry for a while, but then kind of got concerned about some things that were going on. Enlighten us more about the things you were concerned and worried about before you came in to see me.
Well, I have some crowns that are deteriorating, and then I'm concerned about my overall health. And I got the idea that if I went to you, you would look at my total health, and you did. And you were telling me the ways that dental care could affect my overall health, and I really appreciate that. My examination was thorough, and I just really appreciate it. Everybody there was top drawer. Just a fantastic experience. First time I went to a dentist and could say that.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll take that with a massive amount of pride. Thank you very, very much. Yes, when you and I spoke initially in our consultation room, you were concerned about your overall health. You've had a couple of health challenges in the past that you deal with and work with on a regular basis, got most of them resolved happily at this point. But when we did our exam together, then you and I had this discussion about the oral systemic health connection. How did that land on you? It was this new information that you were getting, or was I simply reinforcing what you already knew?
Well, it was new information. I'm one of those people who was thinking that if you can't see it, if you don't see it, it's not bothering you. And you and your assistants went in and showed me through x-rays how it was bothering me. And I really appreciate that. and then you came up with an idea, a plan to alleviate some of the problems.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating that you hit on a really important point, and that is a lot of time, you know, it's the old adage, out of sight, out of mind, and when people don't perceive that they have a problem, they don't think that they have a problem. And even though a problem exists, and you and I were looking at some pretty significant gum disease, periodontal disease, and we had a conversation about the bacteria getting into your circulatory system, and I think that was new information for you too.
It was absolutely new, and I appreciate the thoroughness with which you addressed it.
Yeah, because I told you we are all trained in this thing called the Bale and Doneen technique, which is a kind of an odd name, but it's their process that they use to help screen patients for periodontal disease. So you and I are going to sit down and plan what we're going to do, but you had a long interaction with Angela, my health relationship coordinator. Tell me if she's still doing a good job or not.
Well, she does an excellent job. She made sure that I was totally relaxed, and it was like I was, it was not like I was going to the dentist's office. It was like I was meeting new friends.
Yeah, she's pretty much a wizard at creating good relationships with people, and she herself is very, very knowledgeable about how we do all of these things and so forth. So, well, my friend, I'm thrilled to death to meet you. It is really a treat, and with your history of how you've traveled around and your knowledge of multiple languages is really pretty spectacular, and the work you do with the educating kids that where English isn't their first language and you bring them up to speed. Huge kudos and thanks for doing that. That is a incredibly hard job, and it's good that we have folks like you that step up and do it. I'm sure you love doing it.
I sure do. And with your help and with the help of your office staff, I'm sure I'll do even better.
My friend, thank you very, very much. Bill, I appreciate it, and I want you to have a good rest of your day, and thank you very much for being on the program, and thanks for enlightening all the folks that listen. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right, my friend. I'll see you later.
All right.
All right. Bye. Well, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I always enjoy bringing this information to you. Be sure to go to ddsradio.com. We have archived all of our programs there, easy for you to get to access, to re-listen, re-explore. We love it when you get educated because it does you good. We are headed to Kenya. June the 16th is when our flight is. We fly from here to Boston, Boston to Doha, and from Doha to Nairobi. We will be there for 10 days straight and then come straight back home. We anticipate seeing in the neighborhood of 80 children. Go to ddsradio.com or kinddentistry.org. We need your donations, please. So, until you and I chat next time, be sure to brush and floss.
Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, baby, the whole